This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
It's crazy how many people start a new job and don't spend a number of weeks on the ground meeting a customer. Depending on how you've structured the business, it is so much better from a social media point of view to have a person. You're going to grow your community much easier and you've got a stronger, easier story to tell.
Welcome to episode number 82 of the Paper Planes Marketing Podcast. We are back in 2020. This is our first episode for 2020. So welcome. If this is the first Paper Planes Marketing Podcast you have ever listened to, then you are in for a treat. If you're returning, having listened to lots of our podcasts before, then welcome back. We have a friend of mine on the show today by the name of Cameron Parker. I've known Cameron for a long, long time, since the early days when he was the marketing brains behind a brand called Black Milk Clothing. Now, he was the head of sales and marketing there for almost 6 years. If you don't know who Black Milk Clothing are, I would suggest you get on the internet and go and have a look. Just Google Black Milk Clothing. You can't fail to find them. They are an iconic Australian fashion brand that was born in Brisbane and has had licensing deals with people like Lucasfilms, Game of Thrones, to name but a few. It is a fantastic success story. And Cameron will share some insights and thoughts as to how that brand got to where it is today. He's also been involved in a lot of other projects. He was the global marketing director of Sunday Somewhere, which was a sunglasses brand. Again, go and Google that and have a look at that. And he's recently taken up another global marketing director role in an organization called The Brand Stable, whilst still managing his own little side hustle called The Dairy, who make iPhone cases. So if you're interested in e-commerce and growing a brand, Cameron knows both of those things, especially the telling of a brand story. That is where he has excelled in the past 10 years. So listen to that. I think you'll enjoy that, and I think you'll get a lot out of it. Even if you're not in e-commerce, he's got a lot of insights and a lot of knowledge. The usual bits and pieces for the show: please rate and review us on iTunes. We would love if you could do that, except it's not called iTunes anymore, is it? It's now called Apple Podcasts. It has its own app, so please go and rate and review us there. If you're interested in doing your own podcast or any other sound recordings, talk to thepodcastboss.com, which is Gilberto. And feel free to add me on LinkedIn, Simon Doe. You can't fail to find me on there, and Twitter and all those other places. And finally, if you're interested in what we do, flypaperplanes.co. We are a digital marketing consultancy. We work with clients all around the world. Come and find out a little bit about myself and Matt and what services we offer. But aside from that, let us jump straight into the episode with Cameron Parker. Welcome to the show, Cameron Parker. It is fantastic to have you here. You are the third person I'm interviewing face to face, so you should feel
very honoured.
Slightly honoured.
What was it? It was a 2-minute walk to meet you, so it was nice and convenient. It's good to be back in Australia.
So we've obviously known each other for a long time. I suspect there's lots of people who listen to this who know who you are, but let's, for the masses out there who have no idea who you are, give us your very quick elevator pitch.
Very quick one. I mean, for the past 20 years, I've been in either in-house agencies or in-house marketing teams. Past 10 years, really, Black Milk Clothing, which was an incredible Brisbane-based brand. I was with them for 6 years right from the beginning, and then moved over to London with another brand, Sunday Somewhere. So
let's start with Black Milk, because you either know Black Milk, and when you say Black Milk to a lot of people, they go, oh, I love that brand. Or you say it to
what the hell's that?
Men in their 40s who are 45 years old go, never heard of it.
Yeah, Black Milk, what?
And I guess if I'd never met you, I would have never heard of it. But give us the very short history about what Black Milk is and where that came from.
Black Milk came from literally a serendipitous meeting with a guy called James Ellis, who's a stay-at-home dad, teaching himself how to sew, and he had this idea of starting a legwear business. And I guess maybe like you have friends who start businesses, they come, oh, can you give me a hand with some marketing advice? And so we met like that, and then very quickly I sort of felt this is something truly special with what we're doing, because it actually started as a community online with a blog of women who just had crazy leggings in their wardrobe. But essentially what that became is an international global community of I wouldn't even say women, people around the world and we connected them. It was quite an incredible experience, going from a dining room table of him, his wife and myself to it was over 200 staff, and we had offices in LA, and we sold millions of dollars worth of leggings, but clothing made with stretchwear a month.
And I guess probably from your experience with Black Milk and my experience when I met you working for Black Milk, there's one story that really stood out to me that I was like, how does that happen? Because to me it was the golden goose of marketing. And you said to me that there used to be these swap meets or Black Milk social meets around the world, where all these women were to get together and talk about Black Milk and swap their leggings and things like that. And the thing that stood out to me the most was that you guys hadn't organized that.
Mm-hmm.
These were things that were just kind of popping up within the community. How does that even happen?
Yeah. Good question. So if anyone that's listening, if you literally jump on now the Instagram account for Black Milk, like you said, you either have heard of it and you love it, or you haven't heard of it, and when you look at it, you go, oh my God, I would never wear it.
Yeah.
So how that all started was, and I actually even remember the email, we had this US customer, literally somewhere in the Midwest of America. She bought Black Milk. And so when she wore Black Milk down her street, people would look at her and think, like, what the hell are you wearing? These crazy leggings. But she loved it. It was, you know, there's a certain type of customer that gets drawn to Black Milk product.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when she walked down the street, she felt quite vulnerable. Like, she felt like she was an outcast.
Yeah.
So what she found, though, through our social media platforms, now we're talking back, you know, 2010, Instagram was in its early days. What she loved seeing was other girls around the world just like her wear it.
Yeah.
And she emailed me and said, can I start up a Facebook group? Because I kind of feel like a bit of a freak in my town, but there's other, you know, interesting people just like me who love your brand. Can I connect with them? So then that online community started, and all I need to do absolutely was, it was purely organic, and all my role was to nurture that and facilitate that community. And it, you know, started with, I guess, a global one. Then it started breaking up to regional ones like US, Australia, countries in Europe. And then it started getting super local where, well, actually they started talking for a number of weeks and months and go, oh, I'm traveling to New York. Right. Let's meet up.
Right.
And then it started really like that. And then once again, where I saw the power of that, it became an opportunity for James and I to actually travel around and even facilitate and have these things called Sharky Cons, in where hundreds of women would fly to parts of countries around the world, where we'd have these literally hundreds of women and wanting to connect around.
When you turned up to those, was it like the Messiah walking in?
Well, for James, it was like meeting the emperor.
Stop sitting in the back.
It was incredible, because I mean, this brand was more than just the leggings. It meant so much more to people who wore it. It was a sense of community and feeling safe, you know, and it sounds weird, but girls would come up to me and say, oh, you've changed my life. You know, I had some really dark moments. I feel like a bit of an outcast, you know, for whatever reason. But being able to connect with other people online, or in moments like this where I'm connecting, you know, here in this bar or this picnic under the Eiffel Tower, I feel safe. And it's so amazing to be able to meet people online. You look at the brands out there that are connecting people as well. Like, you know, and that's what we were. We're a niche brand. But when you think niche globally, that can have the potential for hundreds and thousands and of people, really. So that's what Black Milk was. And it was incredible forming those online communities.
It kind of feels now that niche, that niche sort of personality, female personality that wants to dress up and be individual and, you know, have their own identity in a world that, you know, it's very easy to just be, you know, the same person as everybody else. It seems like that's much more of a celebrated status now. You look at, I mean, I've been using TikTok for the past 3 months. I'm sure you've been getting your head around TikTok as well. But that seems to now be, you know, this whole, you know, dressing up. What do they call it when you go to the comic cons and things like that? You know, when they dress up as
cosplay. Yeah, and that was Black Milk. Deals with Star Wars.
It feels like early days of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, back in the day, I mean, there was no brand really tailoring cosplay in a fashion sense to females. Like, it would be a t-shirt with a big Star Wars logo.
Yeah.
Whereas we did partnerships with HBO, with Game of Thrones, Disney, Warner Brothers, Marvel Comics, and we would produce, you know, really awesome fashion for women who wanted to sort of cosplay a bit. Yeah. Absolutely.
Did you, if I remember right, and feel free to correct me, the R2-D2 swimsuit, did you do that before you actually got the license?
Correct. We got a cease and desist from Lucasfilm. It was we literally, you know, this is when we were in a kitchen dining room table. James was a massive fan, decided, oh, wouldn't it be cool to have an R2 swimsuit? And yeah, why not? And we were a little tiny business. We just made maybe even like less than 100.
Yeah.
They sold out. We got a cease and desist from Lucasfilm. Next minute, obviously, we stopped producing it, but these swimsuits would get, I think, on eBay, hundreds of dollars, like, because they were like infamous and everyone wanted it.
Yeah.
We then left it for about a year, and then we were on social media probably in a couple of hundreds of thousands there. So we're probably decent. We were growing. And I thought, this is crazy. Why don't we actually just email them and say, sorry, but can we do it properly? And I thought we'd never get a response. But obviously they had seen the buzz and the energy around it. There were people wearing it, and they said, yeah, okay, let's look at a deal. And so that was the first deal.
Just email them?
Thought, well, what's going to hurt? We're just going to email them back and say, sorry, we stopped selling it. But, you know, we're kind of doing things properly now. And would you be interested in doing, and this is before Disney took over.
Yeah.
And we got an email back from Lucasfilm, and they said yes. And that was, I guess, one of those big turning points for Black Milk at the days, was doing a deal with Lucasfilm, which is obviously in that licensing world. The holy grail.
You've done Lucasfilm.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. And then Disney bought it. Exactly.
Seriously, from that point on.
Yeah. And that's where we, you know, working with Warner Brothers was huge, and Harry Potter.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
So last question on this one. From a technical perspective, when you sat down and said to Lucasfilms, we want to do a deal, and how long does that kind of thing take? I mean, how much goes backwards and forwards in negotiation? Are you like a couple of phone calls and you're signing something, or is it 3 months? What does that take to do something like that?
Well, the legal contracting part, that can take a couple of months.
Yeah.
But then Black Milk is super unique in terms of, we were, all in-house. The only thing we didn't make was the fabric.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if you know, for people out there, we literally, our 200 staff, we were made in Australia. Yeah. We had 60 sewers in Brisbane. We had the sublimation machine. So once we got the deal, I mean, direct to consumer, James would come up with an idea for a print, and we'd print it next day, sew it in the afternoon, and then the following day we'd have an in-house model shoot it. So in terms of speed to market, James could have an idea, or we listen to our customers and they go, hey, I want a cute cat or a unicorn, great idea, let's do it. And we could mass sell that within 72 hours, and we could ramp up production and bring down production instantly. So, and we'd listen to those. We had 60 community groups online on Facebook at its peak. And that came down to hobbies and interests as well. Like, mothers clubs, foodie clubs, movie clubs, travel clubs. Yes, they had special interests, but they were all connected around Black Milk. They actually had the Black Milk name in it. But managing 60 Facebook groups for me was even just an interesting challenge. Yeah. I mean, there were no books back in those days, how to run an online community. Yeah. You know, it was an interesting exercise.
It was early days of Gary Vee, so you couldn't learn from him.
Exactly.
So Sunday Somewhere, so the next project, tell me how that sort of came about.
Well, I guess after 6 years, the Black Milk got to a certain stage where I was super proud of what I was part of in the movement and community, but I was hungry for something else. Yeah. And I met the Sunday Somewhere team actually heard about me through, you know, Black Milk and what I was doing there, and actually just approached me and said, would you be interested? The big thing for me is I actually love the UK. I used to work there for 2 years, and like most Aussies, you get a 2 year visa, get kicked out. And I always had this part of me, I want to do it again. And the opportunity to join Sunday was an incredible brand that I felt was authentic to me, but also came with an opportunity to work back in Europe. So I then joined the Sunday team and was there for, well, up until really recently when we sold the business a couple of years ago.
So from an e-commerce perspective, what were the big challenges that you saw? I mean, obviously, you know, you had the experience with Black Milk, which was an e-commerce business, but what did you suddenly, was there anything different that you found when moving into
it's moved so fast. Like when I joined and met James, this was in end of 2008. I mean, even just back then to build a website, I was like, oh my God, like my advertising was like, you need tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And you know, our first one was BigCommerce, but then this thing called Shopify.
I remember.
And I was like, because I was talking to developers, oh my God, we don't need to worry about servers and capacity. And oh my God, it was like, this thing sounds too good to be true. We're on Shopify. And I mean, for a number of years, we were like the second largest business on Shopify, you know, because we'd do our biggest day was over $1 million. You know, we were almost testing, you know, Shopify's capabilities back in the day. So Shopify just was amazing. I'm sure a number of people listeners use Shopify. I'm the biggest advocate for that. And that has just been incredible. But they're obviously through, you know, before Shopify Plus, you know, being able to clone the store and have multi-currency and all these things. Yeah. But, you know, today it's just so easy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's $70 for a subscription. I think the basic subscription, start up a store.
Oh, and the templates now, you can upload a few images, and within a couple of clicks, you can just have a side hustle and you know, try it out. And if it doesn't work, you know, depending on how you sort of, you know, decided to what product, you can sort of give anything a go. You know, you've just got your time to write off.
So when you were doing Sunday Somewhere, I mean, to me, I can see Black Milk's capacity to build a community around the unique designs, the funkiness of, you know, the clothing, the targeting the women who felt isolated, who felt that they lacked a community.
Correct. And,
that gave
the psychographic of this customer.
Yeah. Sunglasses are a bit different.
Yeah.
How do you build a community around sunglasses?
Yeah, it was definitely a lot harder. I didn't have a personality to work with too. Right. Even though Black Milk wasn't called James Lillis Leggings, we had strong personalities in the business too. Yeah. So when coming in, whether it was Sunday, it actually was one of the first challenges. I had Dave Allison, the designer, but it wasn't like he was doing podcasts and front of center and like kind of like a brand spokesman. So already immediately I had a challenge, and I'm guessing people out there, depending on how you've structured the business, it is so much better from a social media point of view to have a person. You're going to grow your community much easier, and you've got a stronger, easier story to tell. But what I loved about Sunday Somewhere was the name.
Yeah.
That it wasn't actually called, you know, Dave Allison Eyewear. Mm. I actually saw that as an opportunity where I could actually build a story around the name Sunday, which, you know, and this is my job, start, you know, working with the brand was, well, what does that mean? And why did Dave Allison even call it Sunday Somewhere?
Yeah.
And that taps into the purpose, the values, you know, the why behind the brand. And I actually got really excited about telling that story.
Yeah.
And again, it was less about the product, it was the aesthetic and the story. If you look in eyewear, a lot of them, you know, Linda Farah, in our space, like an independent eyewear brand, what unique story could I tell and what story could I share on social media around our brand purpose, Sunday Somewhere?
So tell me about the story, the Sunday Somewhere story. How does that, you know, what is it, and how do you make that come alive?
Yeah, so dissecting the name, so Sunday, you know, everywhere, but, you know, somewhere like if you lived in the UAE, Sunday's that time for you, right?
Yeah.
Sunglasses is actually a product where it becomes a weekend. We knew our customer during the week would wear a Ray-Ban. You know, they'd jump in the car, put in their Ray-Ban, but on the weekend they wanted something different. This is about, you know, the people you meet, the places you explore. Mm. So the brand story came out around Sunday, and that spirit of me time. Okay. And, you know, in a few years, like that mindfulness and me, self-care, that movement was obviously an interesting one. And somewhere is that travel aspect.
Okay.
And so the DNA and the brand came all around, you know, that, you know, meeting people and exploring places. So all our language had to be developed around that in every touch point. Yeah. And that's where, even from a branding point of view, I am all about, well, how do you make someone feel?
Yeah.
And how's that, you know, the senses, how does it touch, taste, smell, look, feel?
Yeah.
They're all the things that I tap into, you know, and I could talk about with black milk or sundae. Well, how does it smell? You know, and I got into that with the team. Well, you know, we need the smell of sundae in the music. We have Spotify playlists, which are all curated around, well, what music would you play on the weekend when you've got your sundaes on?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Actually, then what drink would it be? And it was the Moscow Mule. Why is it the Moscow Mule? Well, it's a bit, you know, it's fresh. It's got that zinginess from the ginger, and you dissect all those touch points and feels. And so everything, you know, when we do trade shows or in-store, you know, we had over 1,000 retailers globally. So when we do these activations in store, well, what drink are we serving? What music are we playing? What's the smell? We've got a candle. Then what's the smell of the candle? Obviously, it's going to be tropical with coconut. You know, all those sensory experiences I get super excited about to create something super, you know, really memorable.
I think there's one thing you touched on there was the language. And I think a lot of people really struggle with that. It, you know, people can do these kind of great visual brands that where, you know, they get consistency in the Instagram posts and the logos and the colors and all that kind of thing. But then when you read the Instagram post, you have to kind of follow up with the same type of language. So how does something like Sunday, how do you go, right, we've got all these flavors and we've got all these smells. Now, how do we talk? That's a big challenge for me.
It is.
How do you?
And it's a craft. It's a craft. And I would say, even from I'm not a copywriter. Okay. I'm not. What I know is the importance of storytelling.
Yeah.
But myself, I need assistance. So at Black Milk, it was great. James had an incredible, and if you even look at his blogs, his way of writing and telling stories is incredible. Yeah. I just leveraged that, and then I got an in-house copywriter. With Sunday, I didn't have the budget to have an in-house copywriter to work with, but what I did do is research and find someone out there that had a beautiful craft for storytelling and copywriting, and I did. And if you go to the Sunday Somewhere website, you go to the About page, it's not about Dave Allison launching the brand in Sydney in, you know, 2013. You know, it's actually a manifesto. It's a language.
Yeah.
And the easiest place to see if a brand's got it right is go buy from them online and your order confirmation email. I hate nothing more than when you get a subject heading is the standard, even the Shopify standard one. They haven't even taken the time to go and rewrite that in your own unique brand story. So it'll have the subject heading hash, you know, something like order 10643. Thank you. And then, dear Cameron, you know, your order has been confirmed, you know, please see below. And I'm going, are you joking? That's like one of your most highly opened emails and you've got no brand DNA or story in there. That to me is like laziness you just can't do that. And to your point, brand, you know, the storytelling and copywriting is a craft. If you can't do it, try and find someone who can and look at absolutely every touch point from your social media. But please don't forget even shipping emails, confirmation emails, just even the language that your customer service team, like, you know, we had with all the business that I've worked with, we have like a Bible and this is how we say it.
Yeah.
These are words we use, these are words we don't use. And it becomes vernacular.
Yeah.
Like with Sunday Somewhere, if you know, anyone's jumping online, jump to the About page and those words you'll see repeated in every touch point.
Yeah. The two that just spring to mind when you say that do that really well. I one of my early interviews was with the CEO of Vinomofo.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And they've got their About page.
Mm-hmm.
And the About page starts off with, you know, go and get yourself a glass of wine, sit down, because this is a long story. And they tell the whole story. It's like 3,000, 4,000 words on this About Us page. And I, you know.
It's great. You've gone through a bottle of their wine by the time you're finished.
Yeah, he did. Absolutely. He said, we wanted to tell a story and we wanted to bring it, you know, bring it to life. And I think that's one of the most obvious areas. I always look at About Us pages with companies to go, how serious are these people?
Yeah.
You know, how are they... what effort have they put in to tell us about who they are?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they haven't done that, then I'm like, what effort are they going to put in when it comes to servicing me or their products or all those kind of things?
Mm-hmm.
So Vinomofo was always a good one. The other one was Dream Farm. So one of our clients last year was Dream Farm, who do kitchen implements, you know, really kind of highly stylized design, mm-hmm. sell all around the world, based in based opposite the Brecky Creek Hotel here, yep. here in Brisbane. When you meet the team, which is Alex, the CEO, and his sister who runs a lot of the marketing, you go, right, I see where the personality of this brand comes from. So all of their touch points are exactly as you say, the confirmation emails, the social media, everything is written in dream farm speak. And it's a delight to kind of be part of. The downside I then find of brands like that is that without having someone in that organization who can do that, if you lost that person, then is there a danger that the brand's going to fall apart without that sort of person in there?
I'm going to say yes, because I've seen it happen. And I'm not going to say, I look at the team that I had back in Black Milk. It's a very different brand these days.
Yeah.
Since I left and the team around me have left.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the heart and soul.
Yeah.
There's a real risk to that, for sure.
The other people who do it well are Slack. I mean, you must use Slack in your business. But whenever you see, just if you go into the Apple store and they've got an update for their app or anything like that, it's always written in this kind of jokey, fun language.
Mm-hmm.
And you read it and you just go, even someone must be enjoying. I think that's the key. I think that's where I was going with that. I was going, when you read these things, you can tell that whoever wrote it is enjoying what they're doing.
Mm.
And that, to me, when you read the Slack thing, you go, these guys are having fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're running a multi-million-dollar, billion-dollar business, but they're having fun doing it.
Yeah.
And it really comes through the language.
Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you a good story. Like, even, I keep going back to Black Milk, but it was like somewhere where I could really apply everything that I'm passionate about too. But so, for example, when we were on Big Commerce, we'd launch on a day and we'd get thousands of people hitting our website at one time. It crashed.
Yeah.
Obviously, Shopify doesn't do that. But when it did crash, most businesses would just immediately put up like a post on Instagram or website going, I'm sorry, our website has crashed due to servers, not able to meet the demands. We saw that as a storytelling point. Yeah. This is early days. So we put up a story about, I don't know if everyone remembers Lady Gaga at the Music Awards wearing this meat suit. And so we told this whole story about being feeling like Lady Gaga in this meat suit in the ocean, and this apex predator like a shark coming to attack us, and it's a feeding frenzy and it's destruction. Anyway, we told this very visual story on across everyone saying, apologizing, but this is what's happening. This is what we feel like. Well, since that one story, our customers then identified as them being sharks, and our whole community from that day on became sharkies.
Yes.
And that became iconography and language in itself. That all started with a very simple story about the website crashing.
Yeah.
Turning something so rational into something really emotive and engaging, and people going, it's a feeding frenzy, and give us our food, nom, nom, nom. And I actually even look at a brand, Desmond and Dempsey. It's actually started a couple of Aussies, and I met them in the UK and I came across their brand, their story, and their emails. Like, how many times do you get an email and you just delete? But I actually open their emails and read it, and it's long form.
Right.
But I actually read it because they're telling an incredible story.
Yeah.
So, you just look at those brands out there that get it right, and sometimes you don't know, but you go, oh my God, I know why they get it right, is because of, they tell a damn good story.
And I always use the Jerry Seinfeld quote. He said, there's no such thing as attention span. If you're, I'm paraphrasing here, but if you're entertaining people have an infinite attention span. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the dairy. So the dairy was your own project, so side project or full-time, what,
a little side hustle?
A little bit of a side hustle. Everyone loves a side hustle.
Yeah.
What mistakes did you make? I mean, because obviously you've got a lot of experience from what you've done before, but surely there must have been somewhere in there that you've made some mistakes that you look back on and go, oh, I wouldn't do that again, or, I could have done that differently.
Well, the funny thing is the dairy is my playground to make mistakes.
Right, okay.
Because obviously working with these bigger brands, as you grow, you become a little bit more nervous to take those risks, to try out a different app, to try something out. So I started the dairy a couple of years into Black Milk, is because Black Milk became this big business. And if it had, on $1 million day, you don't want to make a tweak to something and then something not work.
Yeah.
So the dairy's always been my playground where I could independently do whatever I want whenever, and it's my responsibility if something didn't work.
Yeah.
So it's a great playground for that. But it's really hard, I guess, working on a number of things, is to have that balance. I made the mistake when I got excited and started Sunday, is where I lost focus and energy in that, and well, guess what happened? Sales went down. You know, and I've recently, since we sold Sunday, been putting a lot more energy into that, which is great. But yeah, I think, yeah, just where do you get that balance when you, you know, I sometimes feel like a plumber with a leaky tap, you know?
when you started the dairy, and this is advice to anybody, you know, who's thinking of starting an e-commerce business. How do you go about going, I want to make, so the dairy does iPhone cases.
Correct.
Phone cases, yep. Not just iPhone cases, but where do you start with I need someone to source these, or where does that, you know, where did you start from that, and where is it at the moment in terms of how that operation works? Mm. Are you buying like 10,000 units and they're sitting in a warehouse somewhere, or?
Well, what I want, when, the dairy started when I, you know, Instagram and what are girls doing, taking selfies. Well, there was this amazing canvas on the back of a phone where I could put something on.
Yeah.
So that's where that insight came from. And then you have to do the research. What I wanted something is at scale, you know, before then even drop shipping was a thing. So I needed to find a partner that meant that I didn't have to carry inventory, because one of the worst things from a brand marketing, I never want to go on sale.
Yeah.
And Black Milk was an awesome example of that, whereas because we had production in-house, we could ramp up production, bring down production immediately. So we never had to go on sale back in the day. So I wanted to find a product, and luckily I found a partner that would basically make on demand.
Right.
And through that evolution, so no, I don't carry any stock. You order today, I'll print within 24 hours and ship within 48 hours. So that's what the dairy is built on, that business model. So it's great, because I could collaborate with one artist and sell one case.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I could collaborate with another artist and sell 1,000 cases. It's instantly scalable.
Okay.
Kind of like essentially drop shipping in a way.
Does that affect your profitability in terms
yes.
of, so,
yeah.
But I guess the balance then is much less risk.
Absolutely. So that was my thing. I wanted something that, yes, my margins may be smaller, but you know, when you're factoring having to go on sale continuously and the devaluing of the brand that can do to you. And then what do you do with this inventory, and phones update yearly on Apple, and then Samsung brings out, how do you constantly stay up to date?
Yeah.
I needed sort of that, and luckily the dairy has become that.
So when you went and did your research, and who am I going to use and who can do this, where do you start doing that? Is it just pumping something into Google and going, you know, who can make iPhone cases on demand? Or did like someone introduce you to someone? Or did you have to go and actually do a trip to China or wherever they're made?
It was Google. It was, you just had to Google and then look at competitors out there and seeing how they were doing it. And then eventually you find this little nugget. And I was able to find a manufacturer that would produce something to the high quality spec that I wanted, and that was happy. But it was probably 3 to 6 months of research, getting samples and finding something that was right.
And I think that's the key as well, and I've done that in terms of you know, Chinese manufacturers and things like that, is getting samples, you know, and actually seeing what they can produce from a quality perspective. Mm-hmm. Because you certainly don't want to start dropping money or start sending orders to someone and you don't know what's coming back out of them. How do you keep on top of quality? How do you make sure, you know, if you're making single units, how do you make sure you're staying on top of quality for those guys with those kind of business?
Well, luckily the essentially the blanks are produced, and then for it's like a sublimation printed, so the print is printed on it, so therefore it's just a color reproduction. And then for me, I've got like approved samples that they match to make sure that there's any variations in ink or anything like that. So my products, I guess they cover the cost of some of the blanks and the molds, and I luckily don't have any, my returns are super minimal because unless you accidentally bought an iPhone 11 Plus, you know, Pro case, and you had an iPhone 11, you know, the production's,
it's funny, the niches that we've worked with in e-commerce, the difference in terms of return policies, not necessarily return policies, but return, you know, clients, but consumers sending things back, it varies wildly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, iPhone cases is a great example. You know, nobody's really going to send one back because, you know, low cost, and, you know, they either like it or they don't like it, you know. But then you start talking about female fashion, and all of a sudden, you know, the returns, you talk to my wife about sending clothes back, and she'll send back stuff back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, well, ASOS and you, you know, because I'm based in the UK, it's just, they, you just buy it because it's free shipping, and then, oh, I don't like it, I'll just ship it back.
Yeah,
I know. But yeah, within 24 hours,
I just wonder whether that's, I mean, clearly that's, you know, they've factored that into their business model, but
for a small business, that's really hard. And even I'll bring back the black milk example. That luckily we worked in stretchwear, so obviously there was a give. So from a, I guess, fit point of view, but that's where the online communities were great. We had a group, it was the second largest one called Buy Sell Swap. And because we had international community, well, rather than returning it all the way to Australia, they would actually facilitate their own returns between the community members. And it was like, this is amazing, you know. doing our job for us. That was an interesting returns system that we had with Black Milk, is customers would return it across themselves based in the country they were in, because it would be a lot easier to do.
So you recently started a new role. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, one of the my business partners at Sunday, he bought into a business in the US. It's called Hat Club. So very different for me, because I've traditionally marketed to women, and this is men, lovers of sports and American sports, and it's called Hat Club. So if anyone's been to America, you know, it's very much a sneaker culture, and what you wear on your feet or the hat you wear on your head defines what you are, you know, and who you are, where you're from. I've recently sort of working with the team over there, and it's been awesome, because any brand that I work with, I mean, fundamentally needs to have some sort of community aspect.
Yes.
And with headwear and sneaker, absolutely has a community. There's lines outside stores for the latest sneaker or the latest hat, because it's an exclusive New York Yankees time, you know, new era fitted hat that there's only X number of units, and guys will line up and we'll sell thousands of dollars worth of hats within, you know, a space of an hour, and it will sell out, because that's that. So I was sort of excited to sort of you know, work with the brand and sort of apply some of my experiences you know, for the past, you know, 10 or so years in community, online, e-commerce, and how do you sort of bring to life you know,
so give me the major difference between marketing to women and marketing to men.
What would I say the difference there? Well, I mean, I always come back to more psychographic, you know. I don't even think too much about that, although obviously these guys, for me, the storytelling has been the biggest challenge, because obviously that comes with a level of authenticity, and you know, that's definitely a learning experience for me, because as a marketer and brand, I've really got to, like, I've obviously traveled to New York and traveled to where the head office in Phoenix and spent time in store. Yeah. Like, I've literally worked in store. Yeah. How important is that? You know, it's crazy how many people start a new job and don't spend a number of weeks on the ground meeting a customer. That has been so important for me to learn the language. Yeah. I mean, even just, for me as an Aussie and then working in Europe, when you meet people, it's a handshake, a hug. So in Europe, it's two kisses, three kisses, depending on which country you are. You go to New York and you meet this customer works in store. It is the, I've never felt so awkward. Yeah, it's the head shake. It's like, oh my God. It's like, immersing yourself into the customer. That's been such a big learning experience for me to develop and work with the team to build to life the language and the DNA and all those touch points again. It's quite, I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Very different.
Last couple of questions. If people are in e-commerce today, if they're running an e-commerce store, or they're thinking about running an e-commerce store, what's perhaps the one thing that you would say to them that they have to get right if they're going to do this well?
Why they're starting it.
Right.
For me, it just has to, because, you know, I don't know what the percentage is. It's always this crazy percentage. How many businesses fail within 12 months? Yeah. You know, I wouldn't, for me, I even wouldn't partner with someone who's just starting it just to make money. That's not a strong enough purpose. And I mean, surely lots of your listeners have read, you know, Start With Why, Simon Sinek. He's actually released a new book, The Infinite Game, which I think is the best out of all these books, because it sort of ties in kind of Start With Why, Find Your Why, Together Is Better, Leaders Eat Last, all his sort of books. But for me, that does come back to that purpose, values, you know, why, and that, you know, it has to have a big good story, because when we, you know, for the past half an hour, we've been talking about story. you don't start something and if it's just to make money and retire rich, well, how are you going to build an authentic About Us page? Yeah. You're not going to say, I started this brand because I wanted to make $1 million a year and I could retire in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is nothing that I can work with as a storyteller or a brand. So for me, you got to get that essence right. So when you have to do an elevator pitch and someone says, oh, what do you do? Or, you know, oh, you started something? Why'd you start it? You've got a really beautiful, engaging story, whether it's 1 minute longer or half an hour, grab a bottle of wine to tell them.
Yeah.
There's just something super powerful about it.
My last question for you today, you've mentioned a couple of other brands as well, but you know, who do you look at online, brands that you look at online, be they e-commerce or be they not e-commerce, and that you aspire to, you know, potentially recreate their brand value, or just people that you see that you just go, God, they're doing a great job?
There's a couple, but like when I recently went to New York, Glossier.
Okay.
Have you heard of Glossier? No. Go check it out. In terms of language, such a unique style there, it's makeup.
Right.
But I went to their store, and in terms of that sensory experience, it's like walking into Willy Wonka's makeup factory. They literally have uniforms like they're...
That's the sequel that nobody's ever
heard. It's crazy. So I urge people to go check out Glossier. And it's got an absolute hardcore community. It feels like a black milk. They've got Instagram accounts, boyfriends of Glossier, I think dogs of Glossier, like Instagram accounts, community driven, where, you know, girls will go there and they'll take photos of their boyfriends in store. And I think even that Instagram account's got tens of thousands of followers. Check that out. Actually, one for me that I'd love to work with them is So Far Sounds. I think you have it here, but check this out. So Far Sounds started in the UK. I think it's completely international now, but it's like Airbnb for music.
Right.
And basically it started where if you had a love of music and you wanted to see a gig, well, obviously I have to pay money and go to a bar and you commit. But So Far Sounds, it's basically pop-up where you don't even know the artists, and it will go for 2 hours, and each artist will do about a 20-minute set.
Okay.
You don't know them, so it's undiscovered. And actually recently they've introduced spoken word, so poets or even comedians, to sort of be one of the three sets. And you'll start off with either one person singing and you'll have a band. You're introduced and supporting artists, which for them to gain exposure, and with Spotify now, that's awesome because you'll meet this artist and they'll connect you to their Spotify, and all of a sudden you've just opened your eyes at this person you'd never would have come across.
Yeah.
But so it's gaining a lot of community. And you don't know where you're going. You'll just type in a location and it'll be secret, and you'll get the location the day before. And what I love about that is you're then going to discover other parts of your neighborhood or the city, or if you're traveling, go have a look at the place you're going. I've been to some incredible venues where it'll be like an art gallery or someone's office. You can even go to people's homes.
Right.
So Far Sounds, check out that. In terms of, again, a brand that's building a community, and I love it because it's supporting emerging artists that normally wouldn't have a platform to get discovered unless they're busking or doing a gig in a pub. But then what are people doing? Drinking and talking. This is it's BYO. You sit down on the ground, sometimes beanbags or whatever, and you bring a bottle of wine and you bring some, you know, cheese or whatever, and you literally sit down for 2 hours. And even during the breaks, they encourage you to talk to other people. It's just, anyway, I'm a big fan of that.
Cool.
I would work for them in a second.
That's
Far Sounds.
If anyone listening in Australia, I've just put it up there. It's Melbourne, Perth and Canberra.
What?
At the moment, so.
They need more venues.
Nothing in Brisbane, but look at some of these.
Check it out.
Was this 444 cities worldwide?
That's insane, right? It only started like maybe 6 years ago out of London.
Mate, it's been fantastic. Thank you very much for your time today. We could talk for a lot longer. You know, there's probably 2 hours we could do on the you know, brand of black milk itself, and you know, all the other bits and pieces you're doing. So appreciate that. You're flying back to London.
Australia Day, sadly.
You better get your thongs and your cork hat and all that.
I'm going to go straight from the beach to the airport.
Right, nice.
Savor that last bit of sun, because I won't be seeing it for a while.
If anybody wants to get hold of you, if they want to ask you a question, they want to look at any your work at the moment, what's the best way of them reaching out to you?
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram, Cam J Parker. So at Cam J Parker.
Brilliant, mate. Thank you very much for that.
Thanks, guys.
That's pretty much it for episode 82. Thank you very much for tuning in. Finally, again, please, if you get a chance to rate and review us, we would really appreciate that. And we will see you next week.